We are going to talk about Republican Party politics this hour because of several items in this week's news, including Tea Party losses in primary elections in Kentucky, Georgia, Pennsylvania, and Oregon. Is the Tea Party going to be a big factor in this year's midterms? Is the Tea Party dead? Plus, potential GOP presidential candidates are in the headlines, including Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan and Governor Scott Walker. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will talk with a political analyst about the strength of the Republican Party during this midterm election year and what issues will dominate. Plus, we'll take a look ahead to 2016 and welcome your questions and views at 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Well, let me welcome our guest. Very happy to have with us Bill Ballinger, editor and publisher of Inside Michigan Politics newsletter. He's a former Michigan State Representative and Senator. He served as Deputy Assistant Secretary of the U.S. Department of Health, Education, and Welfare under President Gerald Ford. Good morning.
Good morning.
Oops, sounds like we have a little bit of a shaky telephone connection, but we'll try to see if we can hear you still, Bill. Well, let me ask
you. Can you hear me?
There we go. It sounds a little bit better now.
Okay.
A question that's being thrown around lately is the Tea Party dead? And a few primaries took it on the chin this week. How do you assess the state of the Tea Party?
I don't believe the Tea Party is dead by any means. In fact, I think you could make an argument that maybe they've taken over the main establishment portion of the Republican Party, or at least they've exerted a very heavy influence on it in the last 2 to 4 years. I think there's been kind of a coming together of the more establishment, moderately conservative, center-right, dominant, historically, portion of the Republican Party and the Tea Party movement of the last 4 years. And remember, the Tea Party is not really monolithic. It's not like a single entity. It's a bunch of Tea Party chapters, 9, 12 groups, a lot of conservative subsets. And I think the two sides, if you want to call them that, have pretty much gotten their act together over the last couple of years.
Well, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell defeated his Tea Party challenger this week, Matt Bevin, in Kentucky. Is this more a reflection of a weak candidate in Bevin or what?
I think it's more a reflection of the strength of McConnell's incumbency and his ability to raise and spend money in a primary against the Tea Party challenge. He got out early, this is Mitch McConnell, and launched negative TV ads against Matt Bevin. I think there's also some feeling, Joy, that in the Tea Party itself, there is somewhat of a division. There's some groups in Washington who consider themselves kind of the emblem of the Tea Party, Freedom Works and so forth, and they seem to think they speak for the Tea Party and that they can kind of swoop in to a race in a particular state and spend money and exert their influence and beat the establishment. Well, that's not really necessarily true. There are on-the-ground grassroots Tea Party types all over the country. In fact, that's the real backbone of the Tea Party movement. It's from the ground up in organization and outlook, and they don't pay that much attention to what the self-appointed, self-anointed spokespersons for the Tea Party in Washington, D.C. may think. And I think Bevin was almost, in some respects, a creature of a lot of the self-appointed Tea Party experts in Washington than he was a real grassroots conservative Tea Party candidate, kind of like Ben Sasse in Nebraska.
Yeah, we'll talk about Nebraska in just a moment. But other states this week that had primaries and the Tea Party was defeated in those primaries include Georgia, Pennsylvania, and Oregon. Anything from those states stand out to you as being particularly noteworthy?
Well, I think you're, you know, stating what is the biggest message and lesson to be taken from those states, and that is, once again, the more conservative establishment candidates won. However, if you look at the message of those winning establishment candidates in those states, really, it's astoundingly close to what the Tea Party's been talking about the last 4 years. You wonder who really is a Tea Party, candidate for the Republicans. Is it the establishment Republican or is it the so-called Tea Party Republican? Sometimes you can't tell the difference.
Yeah, so the Tea Party may not be winning in these primaries, but they have won in terms of pulling the establishment Republican to the right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned Nebraska. Earlier this month, the Tea Party candidate in Nebraska's Senate race, Ben, and how do you say his last name?
Pronounce it Sass. It's
Sass.
Spelled S-A-S-S-E. It looks like it could be sassy, but yeah. It's pronounced Sass.
Well, he did take 48% of the vote in a five-person race. What was different here compared to the other states?
Well, he was really kind of an impressive candidate. You know, David Brooks of the New York Times has joked, the perfect formula for a Tea Party candidate is to, you know, go to Harvard Law School or an Ivy League institution, and Ben Sass did that. There are Tea Party candidates out there. Everybody thinks of them as some kind of, conservative, redneck, backwoods conservative. And, in fact, some of these people have elite educational institution credentials, and they're not that kind of person at all. Ben Sass is the president of a university in Nebraska, a big one, Midlands. And he has worked in the White House, and he kind of came out of nowhere early on. A lot of the major Tea Party groups, particularly the ones in Washington that I mentioned earlier, endorsed one or more of his opponents. And at the end, they did something rather surprising. They actually switched to him before the election so that, you know, he could kind of look like the Tea Party candidate. But in fact, he didn't really get unified or majority Tea Party support until just a few weeks before the election. He didn't have it for most of the campaign extending into last year.
Yeah, there was a story in Politico this week that said if Republicans win big in the midterms this year, it'll be because of the party's stances on issues that energize the GOP base. But if they lose the presidency in 2016, it will be because their positions alienated to many of the broader electorate. What do you make of that?
I think there's a lot of truth in that. The real problem for the Republicans is it's looking increasingly like they're going to find it difficult to win a national election with a presidential election year turnout. If you look at all the big states like New York and California, the Northeast, the extreme Northwest, Washington and Oregon and so forth, the Republicans just can't play there. And if you add up the electoral votes in those states, they are so near what you need to be elected, that the Republicans, you know, are almost behind inexorably before they can even have a chance of winning. That's the problem. But in a non-presidential year, the turnout is lower, and the people who do turn out are far more likely to be Republican than Democrat, and that's when the Republicans really clean up, as in 2010, and as it looks like they may do again this year. But in 2016, unless the Republicans can start to respond to the changing demographics in this city, in this country, with the minority population growing on several different fronts, and unless they can start to do better with single women voters, they're just not in a position to do very well in a national election.
We are talking with Bill Ballinger. He is editor and publisher of the Inside Michigan Politics newsletter. We are talking with him about Republican Party politics. And we welcome your thoughts and questions. What do you think? Do you think the Tea Party is still a viable player in today's politics, or do you think it's down for the count? Do you think Republicans are poised to win big this November in the midterms or not? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We'll also talk about Republicans who made news this week for considering running for president, including Congressman Paul Ryan of Wisconsin. Plus, whatever you want to talk about or ask about. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with a political analyst about the strength of the Republican Party during this midterm election year, and we'll also talk about the issues that will dominate, plus a look ahead to 2016, and welcome your questions and your views at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Bill Ballinger, editor and publisher of the Inside Michigan Politics newsletter. He's a former Michigan State Representative and Senator. He served as Deputy Assistant Secretary of the U.S. Department of Health, Education, and Welfare under President Gerald Ford. We have Mike in Rice Lake who wants to know, what exactly does the Tea Party stand for anyway? He feels like no one ever really discusses this. I don't know. What do you think, Bill?
I think the Tea Party, in the beginning, certainly, I think this is still true, was really more of an economic, fiscal issues party. They were very concerned over the national debt, over excessive governmental spending. They wanted to keep the tax rate low everywhere, federal level and at the state level. They were very anti-union, I think, because they saw unions as being leeches on the marketplace economy. Rightly or wrongly, this is, I think, the way they looked at things. Really, they were not so much a social cultural issue movement. A lot of Democrats, I think, and a lot of people in the news media have tried to characterize the Tea Party that way, and I think that really is inaccurate. I think you could say that there maybe are many people who are Tea Party members or consider themselves sympathetic to the Tea Party movement who perhaps carry personally some cultural, social issue perspectives that, you know, would be in sync with what liberals and Democrats think the Tea Party stands for. But that wasn't really the basis for the Tea Party movement. And I think, you know, that's still where the Tea Party is right now. And I think a lot of what you've seen the Republican Congress act like, the U.S. House Republican majority in Washington over the last couple of years, has been a reflection of the infusion of Tea Party-backed members into the Republican majority caucus. And I think that, in turn, has colored the viewpoint of a lot of the more establishment Republican members' perspective on a lot of these fiscal issues.
Let me ask for your reaction of a congressional district race in Wisconsin. We had a longtime moderate Republican, Tom Petri of Fond du Lac, Wisconsin's 6th congressional district, announced he was not going to run for re-election after it was announced he was going to be primaried by a more conservative current state senator this fall. Wisconsin's not alone with that type of situation.
No, it isn't. In fact, we've seen that in Michigan and in other states as well. I mean, that's maybe part of the difficulty in trying to figure out how strong the Tea Party really is right now compared to 4 years ago, because in many cases this year, the contest between a more establishment Republican and a Tea Party challenger never happened because the establishment either office holder or candidate backed out of the race and removed the possibility of a contest. So we just haven't had that many. In fact, I almost get the feeling much of the time that the national news media is straining to try and create what looks like a big conflict between a Tea Party sort of candidate and an establishment candidate in various races around the country, when in fact there really isn't that much difference between the candidates, and you can make an argument that it's hard to tell who's a Tea Party candidate. But, you know, the news media, I hate to say this, Joy, likes confrontation. They like conflict. They like a contest. And I think they try and create this scenario when it really doesn't exist.
Yeah. Well, another reason we wanted to do this examination of the Tea Party and GOP politics in general was our state representative, who is the minority leader in our state assembly, Peter Barca, said recently that while some polls show that nationally that the Tea Party is losing favor, he says that the Tea Party is still strong in Wisconsin. I mean, give us your sense as to how strong the Tea Party is right now.
Well, there's no question the Tea Party is much stronger in a Republican primary than it is in a general election. And I think you can make the case, and the polls reflect this, that among the general electorate, including all voters, Republicans, Democrats, ticket splitters, independents, you name it, support and sympathy for the Tea Party has probably gone down a little bit over the last 2-3 years. Particularly on the Democratic side and possibly even among ticket splitters and independents. But it remains pretty darn strong on the Republican side. And, you know, if you're talking about districts where winning the Republican nomination is tantamount to election in November, that's extremely important. And of course, it may not be a good thing for the general electorate because it means that the majority party, in many instances, is going to be nominating somebody who's far more conservative than the general electorate in November would like it to be, even in a Republican district.
Before our news break, I did want to ask you, how realistically, big is the chance that we will have a Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell elected in November?
Well, I think it is realistic. I personally think it's questionable whether Republicans are going to be able to pull that off. They would have to gain 6 seats, net gain 6 seats this November. They've got 45 right now. The Democrats have 53 members, but two other members caucus with them. They've got senators from Vermont and Maine who are independents, but they caucus with the Democrats. So practically speaking, it's a 55-45 Senate. Approximately one-third of all the Senate seats are up for election this year, and the Republicans out of the group that is up, approximately 33-34 that are up, has got to net gain 6 seats. They go from 45 to 51. They can't just go to 50. They can't gain just 5 and be in control, because if it's a tie, the vice president, who's a Democrat, Joe Biden, breaks the tie. So the Republicans have to net gain 6. That's very tough to do, but it can be done. It happened back in 1980. It happened in 1994. And there are a number of states, you've already mentioned a couple of them. Georgia is, that's a retention. But you could look at states like North Carolina. You could look at states like Montana, Arkansas, Louisiana, Alaska. Those are 5 states right there where if Republicans can win those seats and knock off incumbent Democrats who are running, they will at least pull into a tie if they can hold everything else. And if they get one more, just one more, they'll be in control.
We take one call before news, maybe the response after news. But John in Germantown, what's your question or comment?
Well, first comment I would make is that the media is just woefully inadequate at distinguishing between the true Tea Partiers, and by that I mean like people who actually threw tea into bodies of water in Austin, Chicago, Boston, Colorado, and the GOP clone AstroTurf attempt to take it over that started in like 2008-09. So, and as one of those, for example, I'm livid with Jim Sensenbrenner. He will not restrain the NSA. He has never apologized for the Patriot Act, and he claims in his town meetings he's too weak to rein them in. I mean, that kind of stuff just infuriates us Tea Partiers out here in Washington County.
He can't rein in the fake Tea Partiers, did you say, John?
No, no. He can't rein in the NSA.
Oh,
he said
yeah.
in his town hall that he's just a poor congressman. He can't have Alexander arrested for lying to him because, well, he's just a congressman.
All right, well, let's let Bill Ballinger think on this. Is there true Tea Partiers and a fake Tea Party? Bill Ballinger is our guest, editor and publisher of the Inside Michigan Politics newsletter, talking with us today about the state of the GOP less than 5 months before the midterm elections. We'll also, in our next half hour, talk some about the Republican Party's approach to health care, Benghazi, and other issues. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Establishment Republicans racked up primary wins this week over Tea Party challengers, prompting some doubts about the far right's vitality. Our guest this hour says the Tea Party is far from dead, and we are discussing how the Tea Party is influencing GOP politics and how Republicans may fare in the midterm elections. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 7:37. We are also going to talk some about the GOP's approach to health care and Benghazi and other issues during this election year, and talk some about some news regarding the 2016 presidential race, including Congressman Paul Ryan saying that he is considering all options. We welcome your thoughts, your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. How strong is the Tea Party, according to you? Do you think Republicans are poised to win big this November or not? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Well, we just heard from a caller before news time who said that there are true Tea Partiers and fake ones. And he called them GOP AstroTurf Tea Partiers. And he said he personally was upset with Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner of Wisconsin, a conservative Republican, for not doing anything, for example, about the NSA's spying. Bill Ballinger, your response to our caller?
Oop. Yeah, well, I think your caller from Germantown made a very good point we really haven't discussed, and that is, he, being the caller from Germantown, is concerned, obviously, about national security and about government spying. And that is a very valid consideration for a lot of conservative Republicans. The question is, what kind of conservative Republicans? There are some that obviously don't worry as much about that as others. Sensenbrenner evidently is one of them. Congressman Mike Rogers, who is the chairman of the House Republican Intelligence Committee, I should say the Intelligence Committee, who is quitting Congress this year to do a radio talk show, he is on the same side as Mr. Sensenbrenner in that he says national security has got to trump concern over excessive risk of government spying. Now, you know, the real question is, if you're a Tea Party member, is national security, or I should say privacy, let's say privacy, is that a major concern of yours, or is that more what you'd think would be coming from what we've always thought of as libertarians? Where does libertarianism and the Tea Party overlap? I mean, I think that's one of the big issues. There are a lot of conservative Republicans out there who, you know, differ on that question of security versus privacy. And furthermore, what makes this even more fascinating is that people like Rand Paul, who is obviously heavily identified with concern over government spying and invasion of privacy, that's libertarianism, and that's a lot of what his father, Ron Paul, who ran for president a couple of times, was talking about. And guess what? The extreme left wing of the Democratic Party is very concerned about that, too. So this is an issue where the left and the right actually meet and shake hands, where you have got people that ordinarily would not be associated in any way, shape, or form with each other. The left and the right, both very, very concerned over invasions of privacy, big intrusive government, Orwellian 1984, Big Brother, probing, spying on Americans, loss of our privacy. And so all this is out there, and boy, I'll tell you, it really makes it fascinating when it comes to a general election. There are actually some conservative Republicans that are going to be running who, if they're real libertarians on the privacy issue, they're going to get some Democratic votes.
Saul in Stevens Point is with us. Hello, Saul.
Yeah, hi. A lot of interesting points. Some time ago, I noticed during the government shutdown last October, the Koch brothers, who are some of the biggest money that's supporting Tea Party groups, they disavowed their association with the shutdown. And I think that was the beginning of the end for the Tea Party. They're not getting the funding they did before. And so the Republican Party, who thought they could co-opt the Tea Party and make it, you know, get a bunch of inspired voters, wound up being the tail wagged by the dog, or the dog wagged by the tail, I guess. And that's not the case anymore. When I heard John Boehner a month or so ago basically saying there will be no government shutdown, there will be no fiscal cliff, he was basically, you know, stating the obvious, namely, you guys don't have the funding anymore, and I'm going with more conventional politics.
Is a reaction, Bill?
Well, I think there's a lot of truth in what your caller is saying. However, it seems to me it puts so much emphasis on the power of money within the Republican Party. And yes, obviously money has become far more important in politics today than it was a generation ago or half a century ago, no question about it. However, I think one of the glories of the Tea Party, if you want to call it that, is that they really were a grassroots movement who didn't rely on money when they sprang to the fore 4 years ago in 2010. They came out of nowhere. These were people with basically no money. All they had was passion and commitment to issues. And, you know, I think most of them are still that way. Trying to meld together your current caller with what your caller from Germantown said, you know, I think it's true to a great extent that these so-called AstroTurf Tea Party members are people who've now centered themselves in Washington and appointed themselves the spokesperson for the Tea Party and raised huge amounts of money and thought, okay, we can exert influence within the Republican Party on behalf of what we consider to be Tea Party candidates with a lot of money that we're going to give them. And as your caller now is saying, some people at the national level, the Koch brothers and otherwise, have decided, you know, there are a couple of issues on which we took big stands and we got burned and we looked bad, and we're not going to get kicked around, and we're smarter than that, and we know how to win, and we're going to back away from some of the issues where we lost, and we're not going to give money to candidates just for the sake of making a stand. So you do have strategic shifting around of money, but, you know, the idea that somehow the Tea Party has emasculated itself or been emasculated because it's not raising and spending money on behalf of Tea Party candidates that it did 2 and 4 years ago, and that's allowed the establishment to move back in and take over everything. I think that is oversimplifying it. Again, I think we have to get back to what we talked about earlier, and that is these mainstream establishment Republican candidates have really bought into so much of the Tea Party agenda that it's almost impossible to distinguish them anymore from what the Tea Party stood for when it was first founded, and for that matter, stands for today.
I wanted to move on to some other issues, related issues. This week, President Obama chastised his Republican critics for focusing so much criticism on the events surrounding the deaths of four Americans in Benghazi and on the Affordable Care Act. He said, the debate we're having now is about what? Benghazi? Obamacare? And it becomes this endless loop. It's not serious. It's not speaking to the real concerns that people have. Is President Obama right that the Republicans are focusing on issues that that the American people really don't have?
I think he's right to the extent that the dominant issue in, I'll bet you, Wisconsin and certainly in Michigan and most of the rest of the country remains the same thing it was when President Obama was elected, and that's the economy and employment and jobs. That's the big issue. That's what Americans really care about. The problem is the president hasn't shown tremendous success on that issue, and that's one of the reasons he's unpopular now and the Democrats are in trouble this year. So he's perfectly right to say, let's get off some of these other issues, which frankly may be embarrassing to him, or that may be a negative for him, but I'm not sure unless he can really demonstrate that he's a successful leader on the issue of the economy, and it hasn't happened yet in 6 years, that is going to be much of an advantage to him to shift the discussion to the economy and jobs.
Yeah, is the Tea Party influencing these Benghazi and Obamacare debates?
Well, Obamacare, definitely, I think they're influencing it. They have hated Obamacare from the beginning. In fact, that was one of the basis for the Tea Party to come into being in 2010 was Obamacare. No question about that. So they're having a huge influence in the debate on that. They have had for 5 years. Benghazi, much less so. The Tea Party is not really a foreign policy movement. When can you really think of or remember an issue that the Tea Party is strongly identified with respect to foreign policy? There just isn't one that I can think of. Benghazi, we're getting into, you know, questions now of national security, and, you know, maybe this plays into the whole government spying debate, so maybe there's some connection with some element of the Tea Party there, but frankly, I don't think it's the Tea Party that is really pushing the debate on either on Benghazi. On Obamacare, definitely it is.
We're talking with Bill Ballinger, editor and publisher of the Inside Michigan Politics newsletter, former Michigan State Representative and Senator. He also served in the administration of President Gerald Ford. And we're talking about the state of the GOP during this midterm election year and the strength of the Tea Party, and we're welcoming your questions and your views at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about the Tea Party and GOP politics during this hour with Bill Ballinger and with you, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's get back to the phones. Randy in Madison is with us. Hi, Randy.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. What's your question or comment?
For moderate or close to moderate Republicans, both statewide, I'm sorry, both Washington state and local, the Tea Party and Democrats, the Tea Party is still in full force. They're a very dangerous being for everybody.
Why do you say that?
I mean, I understand where they connect with Republicans on less government. That's good and fine. But their hatred, and I do mean hatred, for Obama is crazy, is real, real crazy and dangerous. I mean, it has become a very, very hate thing. It's gone down to the monies that are being made by the Koch brothers, which unfortunately didn't get struck down. They're not getting good candidates out there. What should be for, we can't get them anymore. It's gone down to the statewide and localwide. Our governor is getting money from the Koch brothers. This is, I mean, I realize both sides do. This stuff has got to stop.
All right. Thanks very much, Randy. Well, how about pick up on whatever you'd like, Bill Ballinger. But Randy was saying that the Tea Party hates Obama. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I think it probably is. but again, Randy makes it sound like, and I think a lot of people make it sound like, it's personal. Or, you know, perhaps it's racial. And, you know, that may be part of it with some Tea Party people, rightly or wrongly. But I think the key reason they don't like Obama or hate Obama is because of what they perceive to be his policies. They disagree with his policies. They think he's too far to the left. He's too liberal. That he's taking the country in a direction that is far off course. That's what they think, that he exemplifies that to them. It wouldn't make any difference whether he was white, green, yellow, red, whatever. They would feel that way. Now, some people can be suspicious and say, well, you know, it wouldn't be so visceral, their hatred of Obama, if he wasn't an African-American. I don't really think that's true with most of the Tea Party. I think it's for ideological and philosophical reasons, rightly or wrongly. They may be wrong and Obama may be right, but that's the way they feel.
A poll out this week from Marquette University showed that 27% of Wisconsin voters want to see Governor Scott Walker run for president, but 67% do not. It also showed that he's in a very very close battle with his Democratic challenger in the race for governor. It's tied right now. What's your take on Scott Walker's future?
Well, first, he definitely has to be reelected governor. I mean, if he's not reelected governor this year, that's it for his presidential ambitions. And frankly, running for reelection, that's the last thing Scott Walker wants to be talking about or focusing on, is running for president in 2016 or at any other time. He's got to keep his eye on the ball, and that is reelection as governor of Wisconsin. After all, after what he's been through with the recall effort and then, you know, his initial election and everything that the Republican majorities did in the legislature, he's got a record to defend. And if he's defeated this November, it's pretty much going to be a repudiation of what he did, even though he survived the recall. And everybody thought it was going to be pretty much, you know, easy street from now on for Scott Walker. Evidently, that's not the case. And the Democrats are coming back after him, and there are apparently enough independent swing voters in Wisconsin that it's a horse race. We've got the same thing in Michigan between Governor Snyder and his challenger. So I don't think any of these governors, particularly Republican governors in states that tend to vote or do vote decisively Democratic in a presidential election years, can take anything for granted.
Also in presidential aspiration news, Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan this week is apparently considering a 2016 run. He said he's keeping his options open. It seems to me in the past he's kind of said, no, I should stick around in Congress. What's your take on Paul Ryan's possibilities?
Well, the problem for Paul Ryan, obviously, is a problem for any congressman, and that is he'd have to give up his seat in the U.S. House of Representatives to run for president, probably. I mean, I suppose he could start to run, and if he's not doing well, he could back out and try and run again for Congress. He could do that. But, you know, the bottom line is he wants to be careful not to destroy his congressional career. Yes, I suppose he'd be glad to trade it for being president or being the nominee. But, you know, he's in a position now to take over another key committee in the House, probably Ways and Means. And so, you know, it's an act which is an evolution, which he's making probably day in, day out decisions what he wants to do. I personally think he's a very appealing, strong political performer. I think he'd be a good presidential candidate and or nominee. But, you know, it may not be the smartest thing for him to throw aside his career in Congress now and run for president.
And finally, as another thing that happened this week, former Florida Governor Jeb Bush gave a commencement address in Pennsylvania, and he told the students that if they have an itch to serve fellow citizens, they should not let the ugliness of politics stand in the way. And some think that's a sign that he's possibly going to run in 2016. Do you think America's ready for another President Bush?
Or another Bush-Clinton contest.
Right, that's right. True. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the news media and the political soothsayers are looking for any evidence that Jeb Bush wants to run for president. I think they'd like him to run for president, and he'd make the race more interesting. And I think many people think he's a more moderate type of Republican who could appeal to centrist and independent voters better than a lot of the more conservative Republican candidates for president. That doesn't mean that he will run because, you know, that's a huge undertaking, and he knows once he announces it's going to be a very different situation. And I'm not convinced that with all the baggage of the Bush presidencies, plural, his father's and his brother's, that's, you know, 12 years in the White House dating back 25 years, that, you know, he would be necessarily the best candidate for the Republicans, except perhaps for all the rest.
Well, you know, we'll leave it there. We're pretty much out of time. Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Joy.
Bill Ballinger, editor and publisher of the Inside Michigan Politics newsletter. He's a former Michigan State Representative and Senator, served as Deputy Assistant Secretary of the U.S. Department of Health, Education, and Welfare under President Gerald Ford. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Christy Taylor for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. It's our Week in Review coming up in our next hour. We will be talking more politics. We'll talk about the poll out this week that shows Governor Walker and Mary Burke in a dead heat in the race for governor in Wisconsin, the latest on the VA scandal, and whether Wisconsin's same-sex marriage ban will stay intact or not. It's coming up on the Week in Review in our next hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.